Are you ready for a war?
It's a trap.
Game over, man. Game over.
She just killed a helicopter with a car.
I was out of bullets.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you.
Welcome back to the After Thanksgiving special of BCD Flixster's Movie Review. I'm your host, Caleb.
And I'm Bama the Great.
I'm Daniel Stoll.
Loser.
Today is November 30th, 2012, and today we're going to review Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Before we get there, we're going to go ahead and look at the holiday box office from last weekend, and we're only going to cover the three-day weekend as opposed to the five-day, because that is a report that comes out of the holidays. So, starting at number one, Breaking Dawn.
Oh my gosh.
Can I just go ahead and shoot myself right
hey,
now?
Hey, listen. It was the finale, and I'm actually going to... I'm amazed this movie held number one through the Thanksgiving holiday. I thought for sure, like, Rise of the Guardians or something was there, or Life of Pi, something would have come up and, like, taken away some money. I saw it, and it was really freaking bad. It was really dang bad. You know, if you're a twihard out there, I'm sorry. I feel sorry for you. That ending was the biggest cop-out of an ending I have ever seen in a movie. Legitimately. It was, like, one of the... It's like just as bad as if Captain America woke up at the end of the Avengers and be like, oh, dude, that could happen. I'm really glad that didn't happen, though. That was how bad this ending was.
Spoiler much?
Anyway, I didn't specifically say what happened. Okay. Anyway, Breaking Dawn Part 2, $43.6 million on its second weekend, I might add. And I'll also add this was the highest grossing Thanksgiving holiday at the box office ever. So we broke a lot of records. So a lot of the reports I read said everybody wins. Even people who came in third and fourth and fifth place still had solid weekends. So number two, Skyfall.
I thought we were done with this.
No, it's number two. Oh, it is number two with 35.5. And that was on its third weekend. I'm pretty impressed that at number
that
two.
That is pretty good.
Right, too. And then number three on its second weekend, Lincoln, $25.6 million. And I actually did get to catch this one over the break with my family. And it's very Lincoln-y.
Lincoln-y.
I don't know. Did either one of you guys catch it?
I didn't catch it.
Well, it's a great political drama. So if you're into the political drama stuff, you're going to love it.
What I did see over Thanksgiving break was Wreck-It Ralph. Enjoyed it a lot.
Oh, yeah. Really liked Wreck-It Ralph a lot.
This is a movie for the whole family.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody can have something to like.
Yeah, definitely very Disney-ish in how they appeal to almost every audience out there.
Very good. Stoll, you'd probably like it.
Yeah, I think you'd like it, too.
I'll need to check it out.
So Lincoln was really great. Daniel Day-Lewis is going to get the Oscar handed to him with a beard on it to look like Abe Lincoln. I had some issues with the movie. We're not going to go into details, but it was a little... Let's just say this. It furthered the mythology of Abe Lincoln as opposed to delved into the realistic Abraham Lincoln. Not that I know, but I just know that this is the man they presented as he could do no wrong even when he was doing wrong.
Question. Were there vampires and or zombies?
No.
Dang it.
Yeah, this was... I know. This was the mythical version. Okay. So, number four, Rise of the Guardians. That was the DreamWorks animated movie, and it scored $23.7 million. I caught an early screening of this. Really enjoyed it. You know, nothing really particularly special about it.
I haven't heard that much about it. I mean,
it's basically like that Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, the Tooth Fairy, and the Sandman team up, and then they pull Jack Frost in early in the movie to join their team to stop this guy who's like the boogeyman who's trying to like destroy all hope in the world and stuff. You know, kind of generic. I mean, I enjoyed it for what it was, but definitely...
Sounds interesting.
Yeah, it was okay.
Getting to number four, I mean, I may even check it out just because of that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's interesting. Number four, I thought it was going to open a lot bigger. I thought it was going to be the premier family member for Thanksgiving, but clearly I was wrong. Number five, Taken 2, was not number five. That's right, people. Taken 2 is out. It didn't even make the top 10 this time.
Wow.
It dropped off the radar.
It's been out for a while.
Oh, yeah, since like October, first week in October.
So,
yeah,
I mean, it lasted that long.
It was impressive.
Up there, so.
But that's right, Taken 2, you were finally taken out.
Boom.
All right, the real number five was Life of Pi with $22.4 million. I actually went and caught this one in 3D last weekend. Very impressive 3D movie. The visuals are gorgeous.
Is it worth seeing in 3D?
Yes. Okay. This is one of the ones I would say it's worth seeing in 3D.
You never know with movies like that.
It's definitely...
Should I pay the extra $3-4 for 3D, or should I not? So
it's okay. Definitely... They use it in a way that hasn't been done before, for sure. And the movie actually ends up... It actually tackles a lot of ideas. You don't get this from the marketing... Like, one of the key themes of the movie is the understanding and belief in God that the Pi faces when he's out on this journey. And you kind of get, like, some backstory on where he comes from. He actually believes in, like, he believes in Hinduism, Christianity, and Islam. So he kind of has aspects of all three. So very interesting. But, great, great film. It's going to show up Oscar season, at least for nothing else for the visuals. It's Ang Lee. I was surprised. I'm a huge Ang Lee fan. So, anyway... That was $22.4 million. I think that about wraps up the box office. Let's go ahead and move on to our news. All right, everybody. Daniel, what is your news item for the week?
My news item this week is that Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen have both signed on for X-Men Days of Future Past.
Oh, time travel.
Yes, time travel will be involved in the new X-Men movie, which I know a lot of people are excited about, Caleb.
Oh, my gosh, you have no idea.
Obviously, Ian McKellen's going to be playing Magneto, and Patrick Stewart will be Professor Xavier. So, if you're a fan of the old X-Men, that's definitely something that's awesome.
Well, this is great, because they're going to tie First Class into the original universe. Because the thing is, First Class honestly broke the continuity. But see, time travel's on the board, and they can do whatever the crap they want
now. Time travel always
Time travel continuity. Will be... It'll save... always saves continuity, airtight, no problems ever.
Exactly.
And especially in the X-Men comics. But honestly, folks, if you don't know the X-Men comics, the time travel is a big part of that, so I'm really glad they're actually getting in the movie. And this also is going to have...
Cable, yeah. This is a very big part of
Bishop,
that.
Yeah, Bishop.
Hope Summers.
I'm really excited to see how they tie all these characters together, because you're also going to see James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender return in the younger versions of the roles.
Ooh.
And knock on wood, we're going to see Hugh Jackman make a comeback too, even though he's being in his own spinoff Wolverine, the Wolverine, this next summer. I'd really like to see him back in the X-Men franchise too. So, all right, Bama, what you got for us? Anything just blowing your mind this week?
Something that did blow my mind, but then found out that it wasn't entirely true. Some of you may have heard this, but earlier this week it was released to the public that Joseph Gordon-Levitt, star of Looper and other great films, has agreed to do Batman, to be Batman in the new Justice League movie that will come out, 2015? And then he would have a Batman reboot the year after. Unfortunately, this is not true. He's interested in playing Batman. Has already said he's not going to play Robin at all. Not going to play Nightwing. But he is interested in playing Batman. So this may be kind of like a precursor to, is he actually going to do it? Is he not? So we don't know. This could be a whole big publicity stunt for all we know.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things about the internet, the problems with the internet. Your news comes out, and while the news is still news to people, it actually gets debunked.
Yeah.
The problem with the rumors on the internet, it's rapid fire. So, the report came out 3 days ago, and then a day later, they came out and said no, but it's still circulating as news. So,
yeah.
You know, kind of hard to separate the two.
But I have to say, I would love to see him take up Batman, but not that soon. It needs a few more years.
I don't want no one's universe to tie into. Personally, I don't want it to tie into the Justice League, because I feel like it's its own pocket storyline. Yeah. I really don't want that connection to be made, just because I can't see Superman existing in the same universe, or Green Lantern existing in the same universe as that Batman. Batman, a different version of Batman, yeah, but not Christopher Nolan's Batman.
That's fair. I just love Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So
you said it right that time.
Yeah.
Well, so, I just love Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So anything he does, I'm gonna.
I mean, I do love Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
So
yeah. All right. Well, my news. I got two different news items here. The first one is actor Jason Fleming, who most of you probably don't know. He's a very small supporting actor in Hollywood. But here's the thing: he's buddy buddy with Matthew Vaughn, who did X-Men: First Class, who did Kick-Ass. Who did, we've talked about him before. Anyway, he did those movies, and he's always been a small role in Matt Vaughn's movies. Well, they were asking him about the rumors about Matt Vaughn doing Star Wars while he was on the red carpet for Seven Psychopaths, and he said he accidentally kind of let it slip on accident that Matthew Vaughn is probably going to do the movie because he said, oh, yeah, yeah, I'm just waiting for the call for him to ask me about Star Wars. And he's like, and they're like, oh, wait, he's interested in Star Wars. He's like, oh, crap. Yeah, yeah, he's interested. He is very interested. So, a little slip of the tongue by Mr. Fleming that might
Or maybe not a slip of the tongue.
We'll see. I really hope it's true. Matt Vaughn would be a very, very good choice. But, so, yeah, we'll see about that. That's the first one. I mean, you guys have any thoughts on that? You know?
I really enjoyed X-Men First Class. That's one of his more recent ones that I'm familiar with. So I think that, you know what, I think he could tackle it. So,
Haven't really seen him do, like, a big sci-fi thing. I mean, you could argue that X-Men is kind of sci-fi-ish.
A little bit.
But, I mean, just from, you know, X-Men and Kick-Ass, definitely a really good director. So I think he would do pretty good. But we'll have to see.
Awesome. Yeah, I love those Star Wars rumors. I'm sure they're going to be floating the net until 2015, until that first trailer comes out. Second piece of item is actually a news item here. It's actually a little old. We came out right after our last podcast went live. The Tom Hardy is going to start in the supposed Splinter Cell movie that's being developed. That's an amazing choice. Perfect choice.
Very good
and
choice.
To get an actor of that caliber on a video game movie is really excellent. Now, we got to cross our fingers and hope, A, things don't fall through, because that tends to happen with video game movies like this.
Yes.
And I also think this is another win for video game movies in general, because you also had a couple months ago Michael Fassbender signed to be starring the Assassin's Creed movie. So I think video game movies are on the upswing right now. We just have to cross our fingers, knock on wood, that
rub your lucky rabbit's foot.
Anything you can do that's slightly superstitious, pray to Jesus. I don't know.
Put your four-leaf clover on your lapel.
Yeah, all things.
Hang your horseshoe up above your door. There's a lot.
If you do all these things, it's more likely that we will get that movie. Those movies.
I would love those.
So, all right. Well, I think that about covers the news. And we are going to go ahead and move on to our review of the podcast, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Jim Carrey.
All right. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is a movie about a couple named Joel and Clementine who undergo a procedure to erase each other from their memories when their relationship goes bad. But the way the process works is that as they undergo this process, they remember, they have to live through the memories again
as they're
being erased. Joel, as he's going through this process of having his memories erased, decides that he still loves Clementine and he doesn't want to break up with her and completely forget about her. This process of loss is what helps them discover what they really had in the beginning. And that's kind of the base plot. We'll go ahead. We'll just dissect it here a little more. We'll start with Bama this week. What are your initial thoughts on Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind?
I really enjoyed this movie. I really can't find that much wrong with it. Acting was very good. Storyline was very good. Always kept me engaged in it. All the different characters reacted well with each other. The only negative that I could find with this and with this kind of movie, it's always going to happen. Is when they're trying to erase off his memories of Clementine, it kind of jumps back and forth between different scenes, and you're trying to figure out, okay, so when did this happen in their relationship? Where's the directional going right here? Are they just jumping around to different memories, or are they actually going in a line? But you soon figure out, they're starting from the most recent memories and then going back to when they first met.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's really the only negative I can find in this. I noticed this more in the beginning of the movie. The music was very well done. It was mostly orchestral style
quiet
music.
Quiet ambient, really.
Very, very ambient music. And, of course, I mean, me being the music person, really loved that. And it kind of gave the character of Joel just, you know, a little bit to work with. I think the music really bolstered Jim Carrey's performance in this movie.
I'd say so. All right, Stahl, what is your first reaction to this movie?
All right, well, two different things. First off, this is one of the first movies I've seen Jim Carrey do a serious role in. Most of his movies, obviously, he likes to be an over-actor, really exaggerated. And
he's a comedian.
Be funny, right. So this is one of the first ones that I can remember that I've seen where he was in a dramatic role. And I thought he did a really good job. Like, I was pleasantly surprised at how good of an actor he was in a dramatic role. So that was something new for me. One other thing that caught me way off guard was there is a lot of people in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
You have Jim Carrey, obviously, Kate Winslet, Elijah Wood, did not realize he was in this movie, Mark Ruffalo, who plays the Hulk in the new Avengers movie, Kristen Dunst is in this movie, and Tom Wilkinson, who plays Falcone.
Hey, listen, so you're telling, what you're telling me is the Hulk and Frodo and the Riddler and
Falcone.
Are all in the same movie.
And Mary Jane.
Yeah, okay. Wow.
So hey, Elizabeth's
a little fish out of water here. She hasn't been in a superhero movie. What's up with that? She's got a problem. She needs to fill that role real quick.
But so I was really surprised at the names that were in this movie. It was really surprising to me. I was actually, surprisingly, I really enjoyed this movie. When I kind of read it and I kind of got the scope of it in the beginning, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to like this movie. It might just be a cheesy romantic movie. It is not. It definitely breaks tradition and how you're supposed to tell a romantic story, things of that nature. I really enjoyed this movie. I was surprised at how well I enjoyed this movie. I found myself afterwards thinking about it, and I was just, it was a shock to me, really, how much I really enjoyed this movie. So,
you know, going back to all the big name actors that were in this, Kate Winslet was Rose from Titanic.
So. She was. That's not a superhero movie, though. Okay,
but still,
it's close.
It's a big role.
But that is not superhero worthy, my friend. Not. She's got. Listen. She let Jack die. She didn't scoot over on that raft. Okay. I can't forget. I haven't moved on. My heart hasn't moved on since then. Okay. It hasn't gone on.
I will say this. I'm not super movie savvy. I mean, I'd say I'm more savvy than the average American. I actually recognized everybody in this movie. Every single actor, I was like, I know who that is. And it was awesome. That's the first time that's ever happened to me where I was like, I'm not exactly sure who that is. I knew everyone.
It's a small cast, and they make a good use of all the cast members, too. You know, I really like this movie. And I'll be honest, folks, I don't sleep through movies. But the first two times I've tried to watch this movie before, and I have tried to watch this movie a couple times, I have fallen asleep each time, sadly, very sadly. Picked a bad time.
But why did you fall asleep?
I picked up, not because this movie is awesome. It was because I was tired. So, for me, I was like, I finally get to finish this dang movie. And, you know, now that I finished it, this was an awesome movie. And it really is it's such a new take on romance. It's not, you don't see it really deconstructs relationship as opposed to you see the process of them getting deeper and deeper in love. You see how they fell out of love and then takes it backwards and to see what made them attract each other in the first place. Mm-hmm. And you kind of get to deconstruct and go deeper into love and what does that mean? What does that connection look like? And what is it like to connect with somebody? And where do relationships go wrong? You know, because that what was really interesting was that relationship, you see them break up is the first thing you see when they start delving into the memories. You see that it kind of was gradual over time, how it started with one incident that got, and then they just didn't like any, like they gradually stopped liking each other because of bad situations and how they reacted to each other.
Well, I mean, that's pretty much true for just about any kind of relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, when you first start, you know, liking someone, you only see the good things in them. And that's absolutely what you're really focused on. And as you spend more time with each other, you start learning all the different quirks and identities of someone. And then you're going to find something that you probably don't like that much.
Absolutely.
And then it may slip, you know, you may say something about it in a certain way. And then it's like, well, why'd you say that? And then you got a whole little argument on your hands. But, I mean, you know, it really, I really do like that it went backwards in their relationship.
Because it really, I know for me, I just felt such more of a deeper connection to that relationship. And I think, you know, all of us can at some point say we've been in that relationship where you see where things go wrong or you're in that moment where you have that, you feel what the characters feel. I mean, honestly, I felt like that where, you know, I felt when they were upset at each other, but I also, you know, remember feeling that anxiety and excitement when you do meet that person and you start hanging out together. It's very cool, but it works backwards. So, I don't know. I know there was something about that. I just felt like it was a lot deeper than your typical romance where you see, you know, the arc.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And also one thing that I felt was pretty surprising, and I was glad that it was that they did a really good job with the supporting cast on this, and I was actually interested in some of the side character stories. They did a really good job at developing their story. What happens is Joel goes into, when he goes into the the doctor's office
there's basically when they get the procedure, they have to go see the doctors to get the procedure. Because basically what happens is Clementine does it first.
Right.
And when he finds out about it, that she doesn't recognize her, he decides, well, screw it, I'm going to do it too. Right. And so you go in, you meet, like, okay,
you meet the doctor and, like, the secretary and the guy who performs most of the procedures, and they actually develop a little story among the three of them, and it's actually really good. It's not just some kind of subplot they tried to throw in there. It actually was intriguing, and I was interested in their story as well as Joel's and Clementine's.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really interesting. And the way it introduced it to it was kind of funny. Like, oh my gosh, we have to deal with these stupid side characters. Because, like, they're these people who come in and they drink and they party and stuff while they're supposed to be erasing Joel's memories. And you're like, oh my gosh, these people. I mean, and then you see, like, the big names. You're like, they're wasting these people. These people are just partying. But then slowly but sure, they get out of the partying mood and you actually get to know them a little better. And you get to see their story arc play out.
And I think... Personally, maybe I'm reading too much into this with that, with some of their relationships. The film actually has some subtle commentary on some relationships, but I think it might even take it a step further, but we'll get into that during the spoiler section.
I just want to say really quick, the first time that Kate Winslet was on screen and you saw her very blue hair.
Yeah.
I instantly thought Ramona Flowers.
Ramona Flowers, yeah. There's definitely some similarities there. Scott Pilgrim might have borrowed a little bit, huh?
A very in-your-face type woman.
Yes, free-spirited.
Free-spirited, that's what girl. I was looking
and
for.
And actually, I'm going to commend, Kate Winslet was fantastic in this movie.
Oh, yeah, she was
probably,
very good. Yeah,
I think she was probably, all of them did a good job, but I think she was probably the strongest. She played this girl who was so crazy and unpredictable and mysterious, which again, that's what draws Joel to her. He's attracted to that.
Clementine has to be like an ancestor of Ramona Flowers, or
yes. Because, she is related.
They're very,
cousin.
Very
all of a sudden, you're going to see Jim Carrey, Scott Pilgrim 2, Jim Carrey fights Michael Cera, video game style.
He is in Kick-Ass 2. So
yeah, well, but Michael Cera is not in that movie.
Well, you know.
It's one step closer.
I think what this even speaks more to her performance is that she, in some parts of the movie, she wasn't just playing the character Clementine. She was actually playing Joel's projection of Clementine as it's erasing through her memory, he kind of has some dialogue with her, and it's only his projection of her. It's not actually Clementine, I think speaks even more to her performance. She's playing
she had to play
a character's version of herself.
Right, yeah, she had to play definitely different facets of the same character, in particular. The one you saw the most was the one that Joel knew. So, you know, I really miss movies like that. They don't make them. Like, we have stuff like Inception that comes out every once in a while. We'll get movies
Bureau.
Adjustment Bureau. Well, to some extent, Adjustment Bureau. It's a similar genre.
Very similar.
It's kind of similar, but you don't actually delve inside people, like the psyche of people in that one. Although that is a very good movie. You don't get them like that anymore. It kind of makes me think of like stuff like The Matrix and things from the late 90s, The Dark City. You know, stuff of that nature where you're looking into the psychology of these people. They don't make them like this. And it was very interesting because I've never seen it. This is the first... I think this is really the only romance that is in this subgenre of mind-bending psychological movies.
Yeah.
And this is a romance that delves into the love aspect. It deals with relationships in a way that I haven't quite seen elsewhere. I do want to say, though, Kate Winslet, big selling point of this movie. I mean, she played two characters, and the character she was playing was kind of crazy. I mean, free-spirited people, guys or girls, they're kind of crazy. They just do stuff, and they don't make any sense, and then one second they're emotional, one second they're not. I mean, all sorts of different things, and very interesting. And I was surprised at the chemistry between Jim Carrey and Kate Winslet, because you just...
They work very well.
When you say those two together, you don't really think, oh, they would just... be great together in a movie. You're like, okay. But no, there's actually a lot of really believable chemistry there. All right, well, we've touched on the surface level stuff. We're going to delve into the spoiler section. Spoiler alert! There is actually quite a bit we're going to cover in the spoiler section because there's a lot of this movie...
To spoil.
First off, the way the movie is structured, this is something I really want to get into. Yes, dude, turn back. This is spoilers. One last time. The way the movie is structured is you have the beginning of the movie where you see Jim Carrey on a train. He's trying to think about relationship stuff. Okay, now, here's what's very interesting about this scene, and you don't realize it at the time. It is actually one of the last scenes of the movie. It is at the end of the movie. It takes place at the end of the movie, but you don't realize it until the end of the movie. You think it takes place earlier. There's a good 20-minute section here where you see him meet Kate Winslet and all this jazz.
And you believe it's the first time they've met. But then, towards the end of the movie, he starts saying things like, I met her at this place on the beach. Yeah, yeah, and she actually did not meet her there.
Yeah, it's not even just at the beach. Like, they, you kind of, there's lots of, like, little miss things, like, as they talk about, like, oh, yeah, remember we met at that party. They talk about all going back to the memories, and you're like, that doesn't match up with the beginning. I thought they met on the train. And, yeah, very kind of confusing, lots of little red herrings. But it all plays in because, really, when they met on the train was the second time they met after they'd both forgotten each other.
Right.
Which is interesting. They still managed to have that connection. And I think on a subconscious level, they still had that emotional connection. Even though they might not have the memories, they had that emotional connection to each other.
And I thought that was very smart, the smart way of doing it. I thought they handled that in a very smart way.
Definitely some great trickery, I'll say that
yes,
much.
Yes, absolutely.
And then what happens after that, and that was the one thing that threw me off about that scene, is Elijah Wood came up at the beginning of that.
Yeah, and you're...
And then he showed up again later.
When you meet his character later, you're like, why was he there?
What was the point of him being there?
Yeah, because he walks up to... Jim Carrey had just dropped her off after their first date. She's going to come over to his house. He's waiting in the car for her to come out of her house. And Elijah Wood's character comes up and says, hey, can I help you? What are you doing here? And then it cuts, and it cuts.
And you get reintroduced to him later.
Doesn't make any sense to why he was there. Yeah. And so, again, like they definitely tricked me, because I know throughout the whole movie, even though looking back on it, I probably should have figured it out. I didn't figure it out.
No, I didn't figure it out either.
Until the very end.
Yeah, until the end of the movie. And what I think the Elijah Wood thing should probably flesh out a little more. The movie, Elijah Wood is the guy who erased Clementine's memories, and he saw them, so he knows about Joel. So what he does after he erases memories, he tries to pick her up.
He steals
a lot of the memories and tries to relive them with him.
Yeah, he steals all of Joel. Because what you have to do to erase the memory is you have to take all of the items that remind you of this person. So what he does is he steals all of Joel's items and letters that he wrote and all things like this, and uses them to try to pick up Clementine in the exact same way that Joel did.
Yeah, well, they even relive some of the memories, like going and laying on the pond, the frozen pond, and stuff like
exactly,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a little subplot with him. And then at the end of the movie, you see that he sees that Joel is still there, and you're like, wait a second. So he's like, oh crap, it's cat's out of the bag. So you have that little subplot that plays out. There's also a very interesting subplot between Tom Wilkinson's character and Kirsten Dunst's character, where there's this. She's also kind of a weird girl, kind of like, I don't know, not quite free spirited, but kind of a party girl, I guess.
Yeah,
a little bit, but at the same time, she definitely is because she has a crush.
Right.
She's striving to be this very smart, intellectual, thinking
right.
female.
Right. Well,
she knows a lot of quotes.
She knows a lot of quotes that the other guy happens to know, too.
Oh.
And what you find out as the movie goes on, once she gets in the same room as Tom Wilkinson. Tom Wilkinson is the head of the whole clinic where they erase memories. And she is
Dr.
like...
Dr. Mirzwiak.
Dr. Mirzwiak. Okay. So,
Mirzwiak. Come on, man.
Mirzwiak, whatever. Anyway, so... And she also works there as like kind of a secretary type thing. We find out later, towards the end of the movie, that actually she had fallen in love with him, and there was an affair because he was already married. And basically, his wife found out about it, and he went back and tried to make amends, erased Kirsten Dunst's memories of him.
She agreed to it.
And she agreed to it, emotionally distraught. Yes. So probably not very thought out, but she agreed to it. But what was interesting is that. And it kind of sets up for the end of the movie where you see the characters fall back in love with Clementine and Joel. But you see, like, she is still in love with him. She doesn't really know why. She's got that emotional connection with this guy. And you find out there was, like, a little subplot there, which is also is very interesting. The supporting characters movie really did get more screen time than I expected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they did. I really enjoyed that story. I don't know why. I just thought they did a very good job handling their story, and I thought it was really good. And this is where I think that... Maybe there was some subtle commentary here, obviously about on relationships, that we are going to be who we are, because that's who we are. She forgets that she even knows him, but yet still falls in love with him. And I think they're kind of saying, you know, we like what we like. And, you know, there's no matter what we try to do, we are attracted to a certain type of thing.
Right.
I think they might, and maybe I'm reading too much into this, maybe I'm trying to stretch it, I think there might be some commentary on, like, I don't want to say predestination, but just a little bit of is our kind of course written for us, because the same thing just ends up happening to both
Here's what,
it may not be that, it may just be, You know, I mean, because through this whole memory erasing process, I mean, they're very thorough in it, but it could just be the possibility of, you know, there's this little tiny thing in the back of our head that was missed, or something that we put in so deep that no one could ever find.
Well, and that's what I was saying earlier about, I don't think you can erase the memories, but the emotion, because your head, and despite the fact that, yes, your brain does control your emotions, there's still, it's still a different part of you. It's than your memory. It's not just your memories, your cold, you know, your memories. It's just your emotions. And I feel like, you know, despite the fact that all the memories were gone, she still had that emotional connection with him.
And maybe I'm just reading too far into it. Maybe I'm trying to draw something out that's not really there. But I think they're
This is what makes movies awesome. Yeah. You can read into them too much and make some great discussion.
Yeah, I think there is a lot that you could talk about based on their relationship.
One
moment that really made me think about what you're talking about maybe possibly predestination was when Elijah Wood's character Patrick was trying to get with Clementine, and he uses a phrase, while they were at the frozen pond, he uses a phrase that Joel, Jim's character, used, and it made her feel uneasy, because it's like something within her kind of clicked, and it's like, this isn't right. There's something wrong with this. And then she just immediately gets up and starts running away. And then it ends up, she finds Joel, and then that same thing happens. Well, had happened, and so she finally gets that reconnection.
Well, and I'll point out that even though they get this reconnection, what happens is there's recordings of their sessions before they erase the memories, and somehow they both got a hold of each other's tapes and listened to them.
What happens is Kristen Dunst's character finds out that her memory was erased, and that she once had an affair with the doctor. So she gets really that really frustrates her that someone would do that to her, and so she kind of goes on this, like, I don't think we should erase people's memories. Right. We got to set this right. So she gets a hold of all the files.
Well, she gets fired.
No, she quits.
She quits, and she takes all the files with her, and she sends out tapes. And so she sends the Joel's tape to Joel, and she sends Clementine's tape to Clementine, and Clementine grabs the tape, and she actually puts it in the car when she's with Joel. And her voice actually comes on, and she says, I think Joel's this, this, and this, and this, and starts saying all these negative things about him. And Joel freaks out. He thinks that she's playing like a trick on him or something like this. Well, then he comes to find out that he also has a tape, and he hears him kind of saying.
And she actually still goes and chases him to work, where he's working, where he's listening to his tape and kind of breaking down a little bit. And very bittersweet ending here. Like, they reconnect, but this is not some Lost style when they reconnect, all the memories are brought back. No, their memories are still gone, and they realize that it didn't work out for whatever reason, but that's the last scene.
They want to still try.
They still want to try, and she is not convinced. She's like, well, and it's interesting, and this is what's great about this movie, is it leaves it open like a real relationship, you know?
Yeah.
You find out, she's like, well, we broke up before, it didn't work out, who's to say the same thing's not going to happen? But he's like, you know what, I say we try again anyway, and she ends up embracing it, but that's the end of the movie. You don't find out if it all worked out or not. You don't. It's open ended, and they get to start the whole relationship over again, basically.
Honestly, it's better that way, I think.
Yeah, probably.
It's more realistic too. I like you said, I think there's a little hint of reality. Like, and sometimes in relationships, you start something and you don't know where it's going to go, and so they just left it up to us to kind of see.
Plus, now they have all the notes on everything that went wrong in their previous relationship. So they can study their notes and then not mess up and have a better relationship.
That's one way you can do it. I'd also say it's probably a bad idea, because if you study those, you might start to see all the negative things you didn't like on before. You're like, oh, I definitely notice it now. I told myself I didn't like these things. So,
you know, there's one character we haven't talked about a lot, and that's Mark Ruffalo's character, Stan. Poor guy.
He is a poor guy.
He was very interested in Mary, Kristen Dunst's character. And, you know, as they're trying to erase Jim Carrey's memory, you know, they're partying, having a fun time, drinking alcohol, dancing half naked and whatnot, and it ends up she likes Dr. Mesmerick.
Oh, it was so unfortunate.
It's just like this clean break off from poor Ruffalo, and he's just like, he's left there by himself.
He's sitting there with her, they're having a great time, and then the doctor has to show up.
And then she's all
Then she totally forgets Mark Ruffalo's there, and he ends up leaving, and because she's totally still into him. Even though I think I'm pretty sure it's implied that he knew about their former affair too.
He
claims he doesn't know about
it. He claims he didn't know, and
he
seems like he knew something was going on.
He also claims that he had an idea that something might be going on.
But he said he did not know about the affair thing and the erasing of the memory and stuff like that.
So he says.
But I don't know. Yeah, he did get... He was like kind of that guy, the third wheel. You know, he was sitting there and he was all over this girl. And, man, how many of us have been there where you're over this girl and some other guy walks in who they're clearly munched in and you're like, oh,
man.
And that's where Mark Ruffalo was at in this movie. I mean, The Incredible Hulk even has problems with girls. It's just reality.
That's just how it goes.
That's just how it goes, guys. We'll get up. All right. Well, if you guys were going to grade this, what would your grade be for this movie?
I'm going to give it an A. I think it was a very well done movie. I think that the characters all acted very good. I think the acting was very good. I think the story was great. I think it was definitely a new way to tell a story. Broke the traditional way of telling a romance story. They really dived into these characters. I thought they did a great job. So I'm going to go with an A. I really enjoyed this movie.
All right. Give it an A. Bama, what is the what do you got? What is your alter ego think?
Well, I think that this was a very well done movie. Like I said, the only really negative thing about it was kind of the confusion with the timeline of how things happen. But that's really not that big of a negative anyway.
Right.
But acting was very solid. Character interactions were very solid. Story solid. Music very good. And I'm going to agree with Stahl. I'm going to give this an A.
Oh my gosh!
I don't think it quite took the step that it needed to be the highest rating of A+ that I could give. I can't think of what it could do that could get that way. But I'm sure that there's something that could have happened that could have gotten it a little bit better. But I think overall good.
It didn't blow your mind.
It didn't blow my mind. Yeah. It wasn't like an Inception type thing.
Yeah,
which Inception would definitely get an A+.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, very solid. I would definitely say if you have not seen this, or if you're like Caleb and haven't seen it all the way through without falling asleep because you're tired, definitely check it out. Definitely something you want to insta-cue or just go ahead and watch.
All right. We are all going to agree.
What?
1 week.
That's nuts.
This is episode 6, and we all agree because I also am going to give this an A. And here's why I'm going to give this an A. I'm going to give this an A for all the things you guys said. Acting was exceptional, particularly from Kate Winslet. I'm really going to give it to her. I think I was really impressed with the performance she delivered with that character that I felt like was actually fairly complex. I'm going to give it, I think I'm with Stoll. I love the nonlinear storytelling. I love the trickery. I normally don't like trickery like that, but it was so smart and brilliant, and it fit. And then it still fits at the end. I love that about it. And I love that it just takes something as basic as a romance, and it's like, here's what using nonlinear storytelling can do for a movie like this. And you get into this, you really do get into the psyche of Joel in particular. And what does that relationship mean to him? And what is it? And I think all of us can kind of look at this. You know, when relationships go bad, there are still all those moments that we all have where we're like, we trade it all for that one moment, which is, I think, what ultimately Jim Carrey ends up doing. And I think, really great character study in that sense, and you know, different take on romance we don't see. It's not a plug and chug. And you know, bam, I'll give you an A. It's totally not, I don't know if I give an A+ because it didn't blow my mind, but I will say this was totally one I'd watch again. This is one I think you should all go queue up, especially if you're into psychological movies. And seriously, Jim Carrey, guys, check him out in a serious role. He actually knows what he's doing. So yeah, it gets an A from me also. Alrighty, everybody, time for a butt section. I'm gonna get fired up. Daniel, what are you excited about?
Actually, I am going to talk about something that I thought about talking about during the news, but I decided I was going to wait because after I heard that it was news, I actually looked into it, and I found that I might be interested in this. There were some images that were leaked this past week for the new video game that Bungie is doing after, obviously, the last one they did was the Halo Reach.
Yeah, that's Bungie, for all those who don't know who they are. They are the parents of Halo. They created Halo, built it from the ground up.
And there were some images leaked from their new video game they're doing. It's called Destiny. Now, I don't know a lot about it, but after looking at some of the images and reading some things about it, it looks really interesting. Apparently, it takes place 700 years in the future, and it has to do with, there's aliens involved, and it looks, they've said that it's going to be very socially is their major point is it's going to be a social game. So I think that after seeing some of the individual stuff, it looks like a really good quality game. I don't know. Like we don't have a lot to go off of, but it's piqued my mind, and I will pay attention to it a little bit to see where it goes.
I mean, it's still a ways off. They've been talking about that game for a couple of years now, ever since Bungie left Microsoft. But they said it was going to be something kind of Star Wars-like in the universe they were trying to create.
Right, yes.
That was something compared. So they're looking for a deep mythology and stuff. Yeah, it's probably that game is probably still quite a ways off. I'd say we get another at least. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't hear about that game for see trailers for it in front of 2 years, honestly.
Yeah, but there were just some images from the gameplay that were leaked, and so there was a little bit of buzz on the internet about it. So.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Bama. What are you fired up about?
Although I don't have a midnight premiere ticket for this.
Is this the
little tiny mythical creatures?
Is this something really unexpected?
It may be unexpected.
Is it like a journey somewhere?
You could say it would be a journey, and you know I'm just wondering if these little guys are going to go to Isengard.
They are not going to Isengard, dang it. No Isengard.
Okay, obviously I'm talking about the Hobbit.
They're taking the Hobbits to Isengard.
Exactly.
Sorry, I had to throw it out there, Caleb.
Caleb really
screw
hates,
all
hates
of you
that.
Who have watched that YouTube video. I don't like any of you.
If you don't know what we're talking about, you should type in, they are taking the
don't
Hobbits
do it.
To Isengard.
It'll ruin Lord of the Rings for you forever.
On YouTube.
That scene in Lord of the Rings will ruin you forever.
Again, they are taking the Hobbits
no, they're
to Isengard.
They're taking
them
to Mordor.
Anyway, this is my turn over here, guys. Okay.
Whoa.
Like whoa. I said...
We were talking while Bama was talking.
Yes, exactly.
Whoops.
Both of y'all need to shush. Like I said, I may not have the midnight premiere ticket because I was lazy and procrastinating and just didn't feel like really going and getting it. But soon after its release, I will definitely be going to see this. I've seen the original three. I haven't read any of the books. Which is surprising.
Whoa. The Hobbit's a good read. If you don't read The Lord of the Rings, that's totally on you. I don't really care, but you need to read
The Lord of
the
Rings
Hobbit.
Fans will not like you for saying that, by the way.
Listen, if you're a Lord of the Rings fan, I love the movies. I adore the movies. They are fantastic. They have revolutionized and brought back fantasy in a way. And they, because of Lord of the Rings happening a long time ago, I got Game of Thrones today. So I can't complain. I think those movies are awesome. The books, although I'll say, after reading them again in college, I'm not a fan. The Hobbit, however, that's a good read. Tolkien just goes off in his tangents and such.
I'll defend myself by saying when I was younger, as probably most people were when they were younger, wasn't much of a reader, didn't really like to read. But now that I'm, you know, a little more mature, I have a book series that I've talked about on here, the Percy Jackson series that I'm reading. So I may eventually pick up The Hobbit and even the later trilogy, but... I'm definitely looking forward to this because it'll be a good. I mean, even though there's going to be another three movies just for this one book, I think it'll be very interesting to see the story leading up to Lord of the Rings trilogy.
It doesn't tie in as much as you would think because the Gollum stuff is all going to be the first part.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how. Bilbo.
Oh yeah, gets his journey. Oh yeah, for sure, so. For sure. You know, on that note, two things on that note. I did purchase a midnight ticket. I am seeing this in the IMAX. Midnight, 3D. And then on
someone
top of that...
might be more awesome...
Hey, listen.
...than somebody else.
What's that?
What?
I'm so awesome, I got a ticket.
Whoa.
You know what?
Whoa.
I'm too awesome to have a midnight
too
premiere
awesome
ticket.
Too awesome for the Hobbit midnight. Well... If
I went to that, just the whole place would explode because I would start singing with all the dwarves and people would be like, were you one of the dwarves? I mean, you sound exactly like them. Dude, you sound awesome.
Nah.
You should go to Hollywood.
Oh my gosh. You know what?
I would be signing
autographs
lay
down
at
a little
midnight.
Thing. Yeah, I'm gonna lay this on me. You know
all
what
right,
I,
guys,
you,
come on.
You know what else I get? Hey, two things. I get a Superman trailer at midnight and I get the first 9 minutes of Star Trek 2. At midnight, IMAX, done. That's right, folks. You see it in the IMAX, you get to see the first 9 minutes of Star Trek II, which is due out this day next May. Okay, on to my little buzz section thing. Oh, and also, this movie, The Hobbit, premiered. I actually watched a couple videos about it. Premiered in New Zealand yesterday. Big deal. Awesome. Anyway, my buzz item. I'm at the end of the semester. I'm a student, so I was working hard, pumping out papers day by day by day. So
new students.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, so I, well, yeah, maybe a little bit. But I haven't had a lot of time, and there's not a lot, there's a lot of stuff I want to do, but not all I can do. So the excitement has been drained out of me, so to speak, but I am still buzzed because I saw a slew of new things that came on Netflix this week that I want to at least try a couple of them. The first and foremost, the thing I want to check out the most, is American Horror Story. This is the FX horror show that aired last year. It's on season 2 on TV right now, but the first season just now got released on Netflix, and I'm really curious to check it out. I've heard lots of great buzz about it. Heard lots of people talk it up. Heard it's a great, if you're into horror, it's totally something worth watching. So maybe some fans out there can key in. And yeah, so I really want to check that out. I also want to note, if you're on Netflix, check out The King's Speech, that won Academy Award for Best Picture in 2011. And Hugo, that was one of the forerunners for the Oscars last year. Those are both on Netflix. So a lot of Netflix is getting some new good stuff. So I'm pretty excited about the stuff coming out on Netflix this week because I probably won't be able to go out and do anything too crazy. And there's not a lot coming out in theaters this weekend. So I did before we go ahead and wrap up, I did want to give a shout-out. We did have a response from Mr. Daniel McBride on our podcast, on our Facebook webpage.
We love you, Daniel.
We do love you, Daniel.
So, Jeremy Tingle actually commented, too.
Yeah, Jeremy Tingle commented. And we do...
Tingle!
Listen, people, we want your comments. We really do.
So please comment.
Tingle, tell that woman to shut up.
Wow.
It's a running joke.
Oh, wow.
Between me and him.
Mr. Daniel McBride commented on our Facebook page, and what he said is, Guillermo del Toro for Star Wars. I want this guy to direct something big. Kind of sad he didn't do The Hobbit, but I'm glad Peter Jackson picked it up. And why not pick Joss Whedon for Star Wars? Now, he's referring to our God Bless America podcast. That was our fourth episode from a couple weeks ago.
America.
He's a big Daniel's a big fan. He thinks he did an awesome job on The Avengers and Firefly. Totally agree with all statements above. Problem with Joss Whedon is, though, he's kind of signed on for The Avengers 2. So
it'd be hard to put him in for two movies in 2015.
He can't do it. Those are too big. And Disney, especially since he's for Disney 2, they're going to put on two Disney projects like that. So that one's off he's off the table. Del Toro's an interesting choice. I don't think they'll pick him. I really don't. I think he's awesome, but I don't think he's going to get picked for Star Wars.
But interesting comments from Mr. McBride.
Yes. And we want your comments, people. We want your comments. We have a Facebook page, a Twitter page, and you can even comment on this on the podcast page right here because we want feedback from you guys. We want your questions and answers. And also, we had a shout-out from Mr. Jamie Tingle because he wanted to know about The Last Samurai. And to that, we say...
No.
No. All right. As we wrap up, going to go check out a couple movies coming out in the theaters this week. This is honestly, people, this is downtime between Thanksgiving and Christmas. There was a crap load of movies that came out this last week, and I saw three movies this last week, and there's still one more I want to catch that Thanksgiving. But then there's nothing else until The Hobbit on December 14th. So a couple lower key movies here. Killing Them Softly, that is a heist movie where Brad Pitt is investigating a heist. Looks really gritty, really dark. Don't know a lot about it, but the trailer looked interesting to say the least.
And Brad Pitt's awesome.
And Brad Pitt is a beast. There's just no way around it. He's one of the best actors out there. I mean, come on, 12 Monkeys. Enough said. Anyway, Inglourious Bastards. Also enough said. Okay. Also enough said.
Fight Club.
Enough said. Secondly, a sequel to Universal Soldier, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme and Dolph Lundgren. That's right. These guys are teaming back up again to make another bad 80s action movie in modern day. I don't know why they keep trying, because they keep sucking, but kudos to you guys. That is the box office this weekend. It's kind of drowning. But all right, as we already stated, check us out on Facebook. Like us. Comment. Follow us at Flixters, at BCD Flixters on Twitter. And then you can find me at Big Cal Kenobi 91 or at Masters Review. And I also want to point out, I had a couple of people ask me why this has been on the podcast already. I actually write for More Monthly newspaper, the More Monthly website. So if you guys want to check that out and see some of my reviews up there, I also post things up there. And my first review will be the Breaking Dawn Part 2 review for the print issue of More Monthly if you guys live in the Oklahoma City area. So check that out. I had a few people ask me about it ask me to bring it up on the podcast. So anyway, check it out. And then you can always see my blog full of my other movie crap, mastersfilmreview.wordpress.com. Our movie next week will be Lost in Translation, starring Bill Murray.
And we have our first female director.
Sofia Coppola, the infamous one that everyone seems to hate for The Godfather Part 3, but the one who actually knows what she's doing, surprisingly. So yes, we're going to get a movie with a female director, I know. And we're going to do our first Bill Murray. So, all right.
Zombieland reference.
Until next week.
Oh, my darling. Oh, my darling. Oh, my darling Clementine. You were lost and gone forever. Oh, my darling Clementine.
Kill the Batman.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
I'm a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude.
Game over.